Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 42. I'm going to cover verses 1 through 38, the entire chapter. And in this chapter, Joseph meets his brothers in Egypt as they come down asking for help because of the famine. Our context is this in Genesis 41. In the last part of that chapter, verses 37 through 57, we see Joseph rising to power in Egypt till he's number two in the land because of his interpretation of Pharaoh's dream, talking about the 7 lean years of famine, following on the 7 years of fatness, and Joseph's idea of spreading granaries all throughout Egypt and storing 20% of the grain produced in each of the 7 fat years into these granaries so that they would be grain during the famine years. So here we are, Genesis 42, verses 1 through 2. Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, and Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die." Now famine seemed to have been common in Canaan. There was a famine in the time of Abraham, Genesis 12:10. Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt. That's when he got Sarah ensconced in Pharaoh's harem down there. And then in his son Isaac's lifetime, there was another famine in Canaan, Genesis 26:1. Now there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham, the one I just mentioned. So Isaac went to Gerar. That was a little tiny kingdom right there, right northwest of Beersheba. And the king was named Abimelech, or was entitled Abimelech, and he had a harem, and Rebekah ended up in that harem. So famines tended to lead to serious consequences for the wives of the patriarchs. And by the way, this is an aside, but in Esther, I've discovered that Xerxes had a habit of waiting for 1 year before he went in to sexually cohabit with the girls in his harem. 1 year to prepare them with the oils and the spices and the dresses and the sexual techniques and all that kind of good stuff. Well, if that idea was widely known in the ancient Near East, and I suppose that it was, then Abraham and Isaac could have thought, well, I'll park my wives here in the harem to take care of the present danger, the fact that they're beautiful and might get snatched by the local gentry, and I'll figure out how to get them out. Maybe once I make some more money, I'll buy them out or something. So I'm not necessarily sure that Abraham and Isaac did a bad thing in putting their wives in the harem. But that's a minor point. The point is famines were everywhere in the ancient Near East. There weren't so many famines in Egypt because of the Nile, but in this case, the famine was so severe, the Nile didn't overflow like it normally did, and so therefore there was a famine in Egypt too, as well as the rest of the world. However, there was Joseph in Egypt, and he figured out how to beat the famine. Now, Egypt was selling to foreigners, Genesis 41:57. In our last chapter, we read this: "The people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the earth." Now, of course, that would mean the ancient Near East, the context from which, or in which, Moses was writing Genesis. Now, this is assuming that earth should not be translated as land. If you could read it this way: "The people of all the land came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the land." Well, I think it's earth, because people from outside of Egypt were coming in. Jacob says to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" They were staring at each other in distress and despair. That's why he said that. And he says, "Quit sitting around here with a hangdog look on your face. Go down to Egypt and do something. Get us out of this mess." Now, going down to Egypt refers to elevation, not geographic direction. Egypt was lower than Israel, as John Gill points out. And he says, "You better go down there so that we may live and not die," in verse 2. Not die, that shows that this was a severe, life-threatening famine. So we now turn to verses 3 through 5 in Genesis 42. "Then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. Now there were 12 patriarchs, 12 sons. One was Joseph, he was already in Egypt, and Benjamin was held back by Jacob." So that's where we get 10 from. "Then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, 'I am afraid that harm may befall him.' So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also." They weren't the only ones going down to Egypt to buy grain. A lot of other people were doing the same thing. Now, why didn't Jacob want to send Benjamin into Egypt with the other 9 brothers? Well, Jacob had already had some sad events occur in his life concerning his beloved wife Rachel and her sons Joseph and Benjamin. Remember, Joseph and Benjamin were the sons of Rachel by Abraham, so they were blood brothers. Well, first of all, the first sad thing was that Rachel had already died, Genesis 35:19. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. That was on the way back down to Hebron, on the way back from Haran in Syria. So he's already lost Rachel. He thought Joseph was dead because in Genesis 37:33, Jacob examined it, the coat of many colors, and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him." Joseph has surely been torn to pieces, so he thinks his son has suffered a horrible death by a wild animal. So he doesn't want to let Benjamin go. Benjamin and Joseph were the only sons of Jacob's beloved Rachel. He didn't want to lose who he thought was his only remaining son. We go down to verse 6, Genesis 42. "Now Joseph was the ruler over the land," that's the land of Egypt. "He was the one who sold all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came down and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground." Now when it says Joseph sold all the peoples of the land, that doesn't mean he took the cash and doled out the grain. I mean, he's too high for that. He was the one who directed the mechanisms, the mercantile mechanisms that were necessary to get the grain sold and distributed. "Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground." Ah, there's that word, bow down. That fulfilled Joseph's dream, which he had told to his brothers. In Genesis 37:7, we see the sheaf dream. "For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field." That's the brothers talking. Excuse me, that's Joseph talking about his dream, referring to himself and his brothers. "We were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered round and bowed down to my sheaf." In Genesis 37:9, two verses later, "Now he," Joseph, "had still another dream, and related it to his brothers, and said, lo, I have had still another dream, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." The sun is the father, the moon is the mother, and the 11 stars were the 11 brothers. They're bowing down to Joseph. The whole patriarchal nation of Israel is going to bow down to Joseph. Now, Joseph had that dream. Years have gone by now, at least 20, maybe 20 to 22 years have gone by. And you can imagine he's thinking, well, I wonder if that dream's ever going to come to pass. Well, when he saw his brothers bowing down, I'm sure the light bulb went off. Oh, there's the fulfillment of the dream. We go now to Genesis 42, verses 7 through 9. "When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Now, Joseph recognized the brothers did not recognize him, and we need to explain that. First of all, let's talk about the length of time that's expired since the last time Joseph saw his brothers at the age of 17. It's been at least 20, John Gill says 22 years. Here's how I calculate 20. Joseph was 17 when he was sold into slavery. Previous verse, I don't have it in front of me, but he was 17. Joseph was 30 when he went into Pharaoh's service. Another previous verse which I don't have cited, but my memory is good here. That's 13 years in Egypt. Then you got 7 years of plenty. That's 20, and then a couple years of the famine. So 20, 21, 22 years, something like that. John Gill's estimate of 22 must have added 2 years to the 20 years to account for the time it took for the brothers to get to Egypt. So it's 20 or 22 years. Question is, after all that time, why would Joseph be able to recognize his brothers? Well, his brothers were adults at the time when Joseph was 17 and had been sold into slavery. They wouldn't have changed that much. Children change a lot more and youths change a lot more than adults do. So that's why he could probably recognize him. But now the next question is why didn't the brothers recognize Joseph? Well, here's the NIV Study Bible's take on that. Joseph had changed greatly. First of all, he was a teenager at the time of their parting, and he had grown. Also, to the brothers, it would be a preposterous idea that their enslaved brother would be ruling Egypt. They wouldn't, even if they looked at Joseph exactly as he was when he left, they couldn't believe he would be number two in Egypt. Joseph was wearing Egyptian clothes. He was speaking Egyptian through an interpreter, as we see in verse 23. The brothers were not speaking Egyptian. By the way, I had a question arose in my mind when I saw this. What language did the brothers speak? According to Wikipedia, ancient Hebrew didn't arise till about the 10th century B.C., and that was much later than where we are here. And what is this, in the 1800s or so B.C.? So, whatever Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob spoke, some kind of Canaanite language, Joseph didn't speak that language. He knew it, but he didn't speak that language to his brother. He spoke Egyptian through an interpreter. That's one more reason why the brothers didn't recognize him. Another reason was he was shaven like an Egyptian. Genesis 41:14, then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. So the Palestinians, the Canaanites, the Hebrews living in Palestine, they wore beards. The Egyptians were smooth-shaven, and Joseph was smooth-shaven. So I can very well understand why the brothers did not recognize Joseph. Now the next question is why did Joseph disguise himself as he said he did in verse 7? Got four options, speculations as to why he disguised himself. First of all, his brothers had been his enemies. He's not likely to want to throw his arms open to them. It's not that he was vindictive, but he could have been a little bit defensive. Oh man, these people tried to kill me. Maybe I better not let them know who I am now. Of course, even if he lets the brothers know who he is, he's now number two in Egypt, so his brothers are not going to hurt him. But Joseph probably doesn't want to even know that they want to hurt him for emotional reasons. His brothers have been his enemies. He's going to reveal himself slowly to them to see how they think. Option number two as to why Joseph would disguise himself. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Joseph might have gotten more information out of them by tricking them. If the brothers, in their fear of Joseph, because they feared Joseph, had been asked for information about their father, Jacob, the brothers may have withheld information if they had known who Joseph was. I mean, what are they going to say? Yeah, we threw you into slavery, Sir Joseph. And we're so sorry. We're so sorry. Yeah, that might have been true. That might not have been true. If Joseph had revealed himself, he would probably get hypocritical fawning obeisance from his brothers. So, as it turns out, Joseph was right. By not revealing himself, he did get a lot of information out of the brothers. He found out that they repented of what they had done to Joseph, or at least they were sorry for it, sorry for getting caught. Found out that his father was still alive, that Benjamin was there. He found out everything he needed to know. So this was a smart idea, is to not reveal himself at first, because if he had just revealed himself, his brothers might not have been too open with him. Third reason why Joseph disguised himself, this is Adam Clark's idea, and I don't believe it. He says the disguise was to cover his warmth of affection for the brothers. Oh, come on, he could have just said, I love you, brothers. All is forgiven. He didn't need to cover up how much he cared for his brothers. Adam Clark has another idea, as well as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, to abase the brothers, to destroy their pride so that they might repent. Well, of all those options, I think that Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's got the best idea here, is that Joseph is trying to figure out what really is in their minds, what their situation is, what's going on, and he was afraid if he revealed himself immediately, they would have just been in shock and had just said, oh, we're so sorry, and bowed down and not told him what he really wanted to know. In verse 9, in Genesis 42, it says, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them. And then he said, you are spies. The brothers bowing down must have reminded Joseph of who they were. Now, Joseph then accuses them of being spies. Now, he certainly didn't think they really were spies. He's just trying to put them on the defensive. Because when they were forced to explain themselves, they were likely to reveal more information, which is exactly what happened. Which shows how smart Joseph was, how clever this man was. And that's why he's number two in Egypt. He was a really smart guy. Now, it would be a reasonable thing to accuse somebody of being a spy. The Egyptians would be reasonable to be on the lookout for spies because the surrounding starving nations might be tempted to attack to get grain by force, as John Gill points out. We go to Genesis 42, verses 10 and 11. Then they said to him, no, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies. Notice now the brothers are calling Joseph, my lord, your servants. That once more unwittingly fulfilled Joseph's dream. Genesis 37:8. This is when the brothers had heard the dreams from Joseph. Then his brothers said to Joseph, are you actually going to reign over us? Are you really going to rule over us? Well, yes, because when the brothers call Joseph my lord and refer to themselves as your servants, they are saying that, hey, you're reigning over us, you're ruling over us. Once more, the dreams are fulfilled. Now, the brothers say in their defense that they're not spies. In verse 11, Genesis 42, we are all sons of one man. Now, what's that got to do with spying? Well, the reason is this. It's unlikely that 10 brothers would be doing spying together. 10 spies? It's actually 9 brothers. 9 brothers are together. Well, I'm sorry, it's 10 brothers at this point. Later on, it's going to be 9 brothers when Simeon's left behind, but it's now 10 brothers. It's unlikely that 10 brothers would do dangerous spying. The whole family would be liable to execution. It's also unlikely the spies would gather at one place. You mean we, all of us are spies? We're brothers? And we're in one place where you could catch us and execute us and wipe out our whole family? Come on, Joseph, that's not who we are. That was kind of not the tone, but the essence of their defense. It would make much more sense for spies to scatter out through the kingdom, not hang together. So there's two reasons why they can't be spies. They're sons of one man, and they're all located in one place. Well, when they said that they were sons of one man, that's why Joseph said, okay, well, if you're sons of one man, you're not going to be spies, but how do I know you're the sons of one man? So how about send your brother here to prove that you're all sons of one man? Now, Joseph doesn't know about Benjamin yet, but he's going to in the next couple of verses. So let's go there, Genesis 42, 12, and 13. Yet he, that's Joseph, said to them, no, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land. But they said, your servants are 12 brothers and all the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive. Now, that's how Joseph knows it, that Benjamin is still alive back with his father, Jacob. Now, notice the sons of one man defense is used again in verse 13. The brothers say, hey, we're the sons of one man. Sons of one man wouldn't be spying, putting our whole family at risk of execution. Now notice how they discreetly put it. They said, the youngest is with our father, that would be Benjamin, is with Jacob, and one, that would be Joseph, is no longer alive. Well, yeah, no longer alive. Well, why is that? Because they sold him into slavery. They conveniently forgot to mention that in their defense before Joseph. Genesis 42, verses 14 through 17, we continue. Joseph said to them, it is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now, he apparently takes an oath by the life of Pharaoh. John Gill says that was a solemn oath. So does NIV Study Bible. So does Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. The NIV Study Bible says that the highest ruler or the speaker's deities are usually involved in taking an oath. And so the highest ruler, of course, was Pharaoh. So Joseph is swearing by the life of his ruler, Pharaoh. But Adam Clark says, no, that's not an oath. You should translate that. We should translate that as, surely as the king of Pharaoh is living, you shall not. In other words, by the fact that Pharaoh is alive, as long as he's alive, you're not going to go back unless your youngest brother comes here. Well, I'll take the majority opinion there. Adam Clark, who knows Hebrew, of course, and I don't, says this, our translator should not have put it in the form of an oath, especially as the original not only will bear another version, but is absolutely repugnant to this in our sense of the word, repugnant to the idea of it being an oath. Well, I don't know Hebrew, so I don't know whether he's right or wrong about that. But at any rate, Joseph makes a solemn promise, let's put it that way. You guys aren't getting out of Egypt until Benjamin, or your youngest brother, they didn't name him yet, to your youngest brother comes here. Now, Joseph threw them in 3 days to think about it. Probably 3 days to think about which one of them is going to go back to Jacob while the other nine stayed in prison. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown said that Joseph did this probably to give them time to reflect on all that they had done. And it seems to have worked because their consciousness got to them. We see in the next several verses, our chapter here, Genesis 42, verses 21 and 22, while they were in prison, they said to one another, truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered them, saying, did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood. So the 10 brothers in jail are now starting to feel a little bit of guilt for what they had done. At least they were feeling, if not guilt, at least they were recognizing that they were being punished for what they had done and were feeling sorry for the punishment. However, I must say in verse 21, it says, truly, we are guilty. Now, does that mean they're sorry for their guilt? Or does it mean that, yeah, we did it and now we're being punished, but I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we're guilty, but I'm sorry that we're being punished. Again, that's hard to judge their hearts. But it seems to me that they're starting to have a little bit of remorse for what they had done. Well, if that's true, then that 3 days incarceration worked its work, and Joseph again shows himself to be a very smart guy to do this. We go down to Genesis 42, verses 18 through 20. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison. But as for the rest of you, go carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words may be verified, and you will not die. And they did so. Now, first of all, we notice that Joseph has completely changed the deal here. Before, he said 9 of you are going to stay, and one of you is going to go take grain back to your father and bring your youngest brother back. But now the deal is one of you is going to stay, and 9 of you are going to leave, which is backwards. So the question is why did Joseph do that upon reflection? Or maybe he didn't change his mind. Maybe he was planning from the very beginning to do that, just to shock them up a little bit, telling them that 9 of them were going to be in prison while one of them left. And then he decides to show a little bit of leniency here. Well, I don't know which way it was, but if he changed his mind, it was probably because he wanted more grain to get back to his family, to his father, so his father wouldn't be dying in the famine. His father's worried about dying, remember? So Joseph said, oh, no, I'm just going to keep one back for surety. I'm going to send the other 9, let them go back and carry the grain back to Israel. Now, Joseph says, do this and live, for I fear God. And what he's saying is, because I fear God, I will do nothing unjust. So it is just for me to keep one of you in jail and send 9 of you back to get your younger brother, because I've got to find out whether you're spies or not. Now, when he says, I fear God, the brothers must have thought Joseph was fearing some Egyptian god, most probably. They wouldn't recognize that Joseph is fearing Yahweh. It's not Yahweh there. The Hebrew word Yahweh is not in the text. So the brothers just think that Joseph is just doing his job as a government official, trying to find out whether they're spies. And they know they're not spies, so they're in a bad way. We go now to Genesis 42, verses 21 and 22. Then they, that's the brothers, said to one another, truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered them, saying, did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood. Reuben has the small comfort of being able to say, I told you so, you wouldn't listen. I've already mentioned this earlier when I quoted this verse. They look like they're feeling remorse. They say they're guilty. They finally realize they had reaped what they had sowed. Now, what had Reuben done? He said, I told you, don't sin against the boy. We read that in Genesis 37, 21, and 22. But Reuben heard this, heard that they were going to kill Joseph in the pit, and rescued Joseph out of their hands, out of the brother's hands, and said, let us not take his life. Reuben further said to them, shed no blood, throw him into this pit that it is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, that he, Reuben, might rescue Joseph out of their hands, out of the brother's hands, to restore Joseph to his father. So Reuben saved Joseph's life. Now, he was planning to get Joseph out of the pit and take him back to his father, but unfortunately the other brothers met that traveling band of Ishmaelites, Midianites, and so they took Joseph out of the pit and sold him into slavery before Reuben could stop it. Now, in recounting this, the brothers said, we saw the distress of Joseph's soul when he pleaded with us. Was that pleading with us not to kill him, or pleaded with us not to sell him into slavery? I suspect it was the former, that Joseph is pleading with his brothers. No, my own brothers are trying to kill me. That must have been a horrible, horrible situation for Joseph. We don't think about that too much. The distress of his soul when he pleaded with us for his life by his own brothers. One thing to be killed by a random burglar, but by your own blood brothers? Your own blood brothers? That's terrible. Now, Reuben says in verse 22, I advised you against doing this. Do not sin against the boy. But you wouldn't listen. Wouldn't listen about what? About selling Joseph into slavery, or about not killing Joseph? Well, we know for sure from the verse I just read, verse 22, that Reuben advised the brothers against killing him. He may, as a matter of fact, also have advised against selling Joseph into slavery once the brothers had gotten him out of the pit. We don't know that. That's speculation. But he definitely advised the brothers against killing him, and the brothers, as a matter of fact, did listen to that advice and didn't kill him. Now, in verse 22, Reuben says to the brothers, now comes the reckoning for Joseph's blood. He apparently thought that Joseph's slavery had ended in death. So what a surprise it's going to be when they find out that their brother is still alive and is number 2 in Egypt. Genesis 42, 23 through 24. They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them.
In other words, since the brothers saw the interpreter, they assumed that Joseph needed an interpreter, and therefore he could not understand their language, the language that the brothers were speaking.
He turned away from them and wept. Joseph turned away from the brothers and wept. But when Joseph returned to the brothers and spoke to them. He took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Now remember, Joseph has been speaking Egyptian the whole time. He's not going to give himself away by speaking the brothers' native language. Now when Joseph heard the brothers talking about, oh, didn't we see the anguish of his soul when he pleaded, probably for his life? Didn't we see his distress? Now his blood's come on our heads. What have we done? Oh my gosh. Joseph heard that and he turned away so they couldn't see him crying and he wept. Now here's some options as to why he wept. Perhaps it was because he had heard his brothers repenting for their sin. But I question that. Were the brothers repenting or were they just expressing sorrow that they were being punished? I think it's sort of a close question. Could be either one. It could be the reason Joseph wept was because he was recalling his anguish when he realized his own brothers were going to kill him. And the memory of that teared him up. Could be a combination of the two. He was happy that his brothers were repenting and he was remembering the horrible things they had done to him. But at any rate, he was crying and it's understandable. So in verse 24, we see that Joseph had Simeon bound in front of the other brothers, in front of his other nine brothers. Why Simeon? Why was the secondborn Simeon taken instead of the firstborn Reuben as surety for Benjamin's return to Egypt? It's perhaps because Joseph remembered that Reuben had saved his life. He wasn't going to keep Reuben in prison when Reuben had done everything he could to keep Joseph alive. And Reuben would be the logical choice since he's the firstborn. Well, Simeon's the secondborn. We're not going to let Reuben get punished for what he had done, so we're going to take Simeon the second in command. And not only that, Simeon was probably the most cruel and hard-hearted among the brothers, as John Gill says, as appears from the affair of Shechem when Simeon's brother, a sister, Dinah, was raped by Shechem, a local lad. And Simeon, along with his brother Levi, then suckered the Shechemites into getting circumcised and then killed them all while they were recovering from their wounds. Pretty nasty business. So it's logical that Simeon was kept behind as surety. Now, one question we need to ask, why did Joseph carry on the charade by binding Simeon? Why didn't he just reveal himself and send the grain back to Jacob and Canaan? Well, I think it's because he probably didn't trust his brothers. They could have taken the grain, gone back to Canaan, and never said a word to Jacob about Joseph being down there. I mean, this is what they would have to do. Jacob, we found Joseph down there. What do you mean you found Joseph? He's gotten killed by a wild beast. You told me so. How could he be down in Egypt? Well, actually, he wasn't killed by a wild beast. Dad, we sold him into slavery. Well, you know, the brothers are probably not going to do that, and Joseph realizes they're not going to fess up to their crime. So he wants some security, and he's got security. Simeon. We go to chapter 42, verses 25 through 28. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And thus it was done for them. This is the nine brothers, the 10 brothers minus Simeon who stayed behind. So nine of them are going. Of the 12, let's recount that to keep straight here. Nine are going because Simeon's in jail. Joseph is in charge of Egypt and Benjamin's back in Canaan. So that's 12 minus 3 is 9. So nine brothers are going back. Thus it was done for them. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed from there. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money, and behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. Then he said to his brothers, we don't know which brother it was that found the money, so it just says he said to his brothers, my money has been returned, and behold, it is even in my sack. And their hearts sank, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? Now Joseph had put the money back there in the sacks. He'd put them in all the sacks, actually. Only one was opened here. My first question is, was this not a defrauding of the government of Egypt? Giving the grain away instead of paying for it? The customers would receive the grain for free rather than paying for the grain? Well, here's John Gill defends Joseph against that charge of fraud. Joseph would have discretionary power on how much to charge for grain. Remember, he was making money hand over fist for Egypt because of his scheme, granary scheme, that the Pharaoh recognized. The Pharaoh had put him in charge all over Egypt, says nobody says anything what this guy does, because there's only one person that can tell Joseph what to do, and that's me. He had saved Egypt from disaster, and so nobody's going to accuse him of ripping the government off. Besides, the money for nine sacks of grains ain't an awful lot, to be honest with you. And besides, he might have paid for the money from his own funds. He had plenty of money, I'm sure. So we're not going to get Joseph for that. Now, when The brothers saw the money at the top of that sack. What must they have thought? They, first of all, are going to think, oh my gosh, we're being framed. Somebody's going to accuse us of stealing money from the Egyptian government. That's just going to prove that we're spies. Oh my gosh. Now, why did Joseph want to do this? Well, a couple of options. First option, he wanted his family to have more money to get through the famine. Remember now, Joseph put the money in all nine sacks, not just in the one sack here. He had the money in all nine sacks. The other brothers hadn't discovered those other eight sacks of money. But Joseph says, I'm going to give him some more money. That'll help him get through the famine. Now, of course, if that's true, unless it was Joseph's personal money, that would have been corruption by a government official. But let's assume it was Joseph's money. Just to get beyond that little problem. Now, here is what Barnes says about his view as to Joseph's motive. He says, Joseph could not have meant thus to alarm them, as their fear would act as an obstacle to their coming again accompanied by Benjamin. It is more likely that he intended it as an encouragement and sign of secret goodwill. I don't think so. I don't think Barnes is right here. I'm sorry, this is not Barnes. This is Ellicott. I don't think Joseph was trying to be nice to the brothers by doing this. First of all, he was surely smart enough to realize that the brothers are going to think, oh my gosh, we've been framed. How could it be a sign of his goodwill when Joseph has shown nothing but harshness to the brothers? You're spies, you're spies. Oh, but now he's being nice and giving them their money back? Come on. I just don't understand this kind of thinking from this eloquent and excellent commentator that I use all the time, but I think he's really off base here. But even if Joseph had thought that they would not have been afraid, they would have been grateful for the money coming back, that's not going to really explain anything, because if he had meant to frighten them, which I believe he did, that fear in the brothers would not be an obstacle to their coming back and bringing Benjamin with them, that because Simeon's in jail. He's surety. They will have to come back. Whether they're afraid or not, they got to come back and get Simeon. So I think Ellicott's way off base here to say that Joseph was just trying to be nice to his brothers by giving them their money back. He wanted to put the fear of God into his brothers by framing them, so that they would know that their selling Joseph into slavery was heinous, and that's why he did it. And he is. He's putting the fear of God into him. And how do we know that? Because the brothers at the lodging place, as they realized the money in one sack had been returned, they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" They are really starting to get the fear of God in them. Their attitude has totally changed from the time 20-plus years earlier they had sold Joseph into slavery. We now go to Genesis chapter 42, verses 29 through 34. When they came, that's the brothers, when they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man, the lord of the land," that's Joseph, "spoke harshly with us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, 'We are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father, one who is no longer alive, and the youngest is with our father.'" The one who is no longer alive is Joseph, and the youngest, that's Benjamin, "is with our father today in the land of Canaan. The man, the lord of the land," that's Joseph, "said to us, 'By this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me and take grain for the famine of your households and go.'" So the brother, of course, that was left was Simeon. "But bring your youngest brother to me," that's Benjamin, "to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give your brother to you. I will give Benjamin back to you so that you may trade in the land." Excuse me, "I will give your brother," that would be Simeon, "get him out of jail so that you may trade in the land." Now notice how smart Joseph was in all this. His scheme, this fake spy scheme, this framing of thievery scheme that he had pulled on his brothers, it forced them to talk to Jacob about what had happened. If Joseph had not done this, the brothers could have just gone back to Jacob and remained quiet. If Joseph had just said, "I'm Joseph," and the brothers had gone back, Simeon along with them, they wouldn't have told their father Jacob that they had sold Joseph into slavery and now he was number two in Egypt, because they would have to admit that they sold him into slavery. And that would just be a pretty hard thing to do. So Joseph's very smart. He's forcing them to come back to Egypt. And he's forcing them to bring Benjamin so he can see his blood brother. Remember, Benjamin is the brother of his blood brother of his mother and his father, a full brother, not a half brother. His mother's Rachel and his father's Jacob. We go down to Genesis 42, verse 35. "Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks." This is when they're back in Israel, back with Jacob. I assume this is in Hebron, although it doesn't say. Behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. Every man's, not just one of the brothers, but all of them. All, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, all the brothers and Jacob saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. Jacob was dismayed too, because, hey, this looks like, Jacob's looking at his son, said, what'd you do, steal the money to come back? Or, did somebody framing you? What's going on here? Now, here's the obvious question. They had already found money on the way out, as I mentioned in verse 27. Why do they find it again? Well, there's a bunch of elaborate schemes for this, and I think there's a simple answer to it. Here's option number one, is they had opened up all 12 sacks at the lodging on the way, found the money, then put the money back in the sacks because they didn't want to, Jacob, when he found out about the money, they didn't want Jacob to blame them for not returning it when they were still close to Egypt. In other words, they were going to say, oh, let's open up our sacks. Oh, where'd this money come from? But if they'd have told Jacob, well, we found it all back in the lodging place on the way out, Jacob would have said, well, why didn't you turn around and take the money back and give it back? So they were pretending that they were surprised when the money came out, according to this theory. Well, that brings up a question. Why didn't they just turn around and take the money back if they just found it even in that one sack? I imagine they wanted to get out of Egypt. They didn't want to go back to Egypt with or without the money. So at any rate, they came back, and so they feigned shock and dismay when opening the sacks. That's option number one. They had already found the money in the lodging place, put it back in so that Jacob wouldn't blame them for not taking it back when they had the chance. Then they say, oh, and they pretend that they're amazed when they open up the sacks. I don't believe that option. Gill and Jameson Foster Brown suggest that. Here's option number two. This is Adam Clark's idea. Joseph packed the money this way. He put the silver on top of one bag, and that was the bag that was opened at the lodging place. The other eight bags, he put the silver at the bottom of those, and it just happened that the bag with the silver on top was open first, but when the other eight bags were opened, it wasn't noticed that the silver is the bottom. I think that is pretty ludicrous. That, why would Joseph have done that? And it's always just by chance they opened up the right one. Come on. That's not it. Here's the answer. This is from Barnes, Albert Barnes. Apparently the one who opened his sack before on the journey at the lodging place was the only one who had opened his sack. Now, why would only one brother open his sack? Because one sack was enough to feed the donkeys. It was inconvenient on the journey to open the other nine sacks, to unpack it and repack it again. They didn't need but one bag, so they opened one bag. They didn't know about the other eight sacks having money in it. And that means that when the nine brothers open up their bags, the other eight bags, their shock was not feigned, but it was genuine. They were thinking, oh my gosh, it's one thing to steal one bag of grain's worth of money. Now we've got eight more bags with stolen money in it, with apparently stolen money in it that we didn't steal. So what's going on here? So they're all upset. We go now to Genesis 42, 36 through 38, and we will finish this particular audio. Verse 36, their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. And you would take Benjamin? All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. Now when Jacob said, you, he's talking to the brothers, you have bereaved me of my children. It sounds like Jacob is blaming his sons for selling Joseph into slavery. But remember now, Jacob doesn't know that his sons, at least ostensibly, doesn't know that his sons had sold Joseph into slavery. But here it sounds like he's accusing them of that. Actually, all that was ostensibly known by Jacob was that Joseph had been eaten by a wild beast. But I speculate here, maybe Jacob had heard by scuttlebutt that the brothers had sold Joseph into slavery. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But there's another way you can explain this. When Jacob says, you brothers have betrayed me and my children, he could have just been referring to the fact you, when you told me about what happened, by your telling me you have bereaved me of my children. I think that's most probably what is going on here. So I don't think he's really trying to pin guilt on the sons, but he's saying you told me about Joseph being gone. So that's one child gone. Now you're telling me Simeon's down in Egypt. He's bound in prison in Egypt. That's two children gone. And now you want to take Benjamin. Well, that's going to be number three. So Jacob is not happy about Benjamin going to Egypt, and he refuses. Well, Reuben now realizes if they're going to get Simeon out, they've got to get Benjamin down to Egypt. So Reuben makes what I would say is sort of a rash vow. You could put my two sons to death if I don't bring Benjamin back to you. Put my two sons to death. Well, the NIV says that was a generous offer. Yeah, I should say. Adam Clark says, quote, there is scarcely a transaction in which Reuben is concerned that does not serve to set his character in an amiable point of view, except the single instance mentioned in Genesis 35:22. That refers to the time when he had sex with his stepmother, Bilhah. Yay, incest. Except for incest, he was pretty good. He had tried to save Joseph from death and sail into slavery. Now, I have a question. Did Reuben have the right, either morally or legally, to make such an offer that his two sons would be killed if Benjamin was not brought back by Reuben? John Gill says that was a strange offer. As Gill points out, how would Jacob killing two of his grandsons alleviate the pain of losing Benjamin? John Gill says the answer to that is that Reuben was so confident that Benjamin was coming back that the slayings would never take place. And besides, would Jacob kill his own two grandsons? So maybe Reuben realizes that this is not going to be a literal surety here, a literal oath to put two sons to death. He's just saying, this is how sure I am. There's not going to be any necessity to kill the two grandsons of Jacob, because I'm bringing Benjamin back. Now, in verse 38, Jacob refuses Reuben's generous offer to kill Jacob's two grandsons if Benjamin doesn't come back. He says, no, my son's not going to go down with you. His brother is dead. That's his full brother, Joseph, is dead. Benjamin's full brother, Joseph, is dead. And he, Benjamin, alone is left. Remember, his beloved wife, Rachel, his favorite wife, she's gone. Joseph is apparently gone, although not actually. And now, if he loses Benjamin, that's it. That'll be it. And he says, if harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, which could happen, you know, bandits could get him, you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. That was the Hebrew way of saying I'm going to die in misery. Sheol is the grave. We'll go down to my grave to death in sorrow. John Gill speculates that Jacob here probably had a strong suspicion that the sons were up to no good. Now, I don't know what that would be. What would they do with Benjamin? Sell him into slavery too? Maybe Jacob had heard that the brothers had actually sold Joseph into slavery, but now they're thinking, well, maybe they'll do the same thing with Benjamin, trying to get some grain, trying to keep us alive. Well, on that sad note, we will now conclude our discussion of Genesis chapter 42. We did verses 1 through 38, and that prepares us for our next audio, which will cover the entire chapter of Genesis 43, verses 1 through 34, in which we see Joseph's brothers returning to Egypt. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.